23. I'll give you a correct address, but you have a fire in a one-story ordinary. Looks like it's about 45.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome to another Fire Engineering Podcast, Networking for Success. I am your host, Dave McGlynn. For first-time joiners or first-time listeners, just a quick background of the show. I apologize to everybody else that's heard this for over 2 years, but you never know. With every new guest comes some new listeners. So my show is called Networking for Success because it is quite literally that. I get to have this platform through fire engineering to talk to great leaders through our fire and emergency services, in our military, and just throughout the country that have all kinds of different facets and backgrounds into leadership and even the realms of training, which is one of the expertise and things that are in my wheelhouse. I like to have them tell their story. I like to have them be able to, you know, give a quick background as to how they see the world, how they perceive leadership, what they feel is important about it, how they look at training, what they feel is important about it, and then different people that have mentored them and times that they've you know, been mentored through their career to help them out. And then lastly, I always end it with, you know, them talking about their legacy. So if you're joining the show as a first time listener, I really appreciate it. And I'm sure my guest appreciates it because if you're listening for the first time, it's obviously because you're listening because of my guest. So I appreciate it. So my guest is a great mentor of mine. I always say that I hate when people use that term so loosely because it gets bastardized. There's a good luster behind the word mentor for a reason, as long as it's used correctly. This guy truly is a mentor. I talk to him probably on a weekly basis. Anytime that I'm having a hard time, which is almost 90% of our phone calls, which I feel bad for his ears for, he's always there to to talk me off the ledge and kind of give me some fatherly and some older brother advice, and I always am very appreciative of that. So my guest tonight is Chief Robert Kuntz. Chief Kuntz is the fire chief at Fort Campbell, which is in Kentucky slash kind of Tennessee, mostly Tennessee. he oversees five stations with 89 personnel. Prior to that, he was at Rheinland Pfalz. I hope I said it right because I know he told me how to say it before, which was in Germany. It's one of the largest DOD fire departments and also one of the largest in the Army. They had 9 stations, 224 firefighters, and they covered 31 garrison sites, which is, you know, 31 basically different military installations. Chief Kuntz has over 30 years of firefighting experience, and he's climbed through the ranks in multiple different realms of being a fire chief and assistant chief, overseeing prevention, training, operations, being a program manager, being a an analyst, being a staffer for Army policy and Department of Defense policy, and is also a veteran from our U.S. Air Force. He's got a bachelor's degree in management, and he also has an associate's degree in fire science. Lastly, before I get into all of his accomplishments and awards, I will say that I was fortunate enough to know when this was awarded to him. So he was the 2018 recipient of the Department of Army Fire Chief of the Year, which is, you know, huge. And I was glad that I was part of his life when he was able to get that accomplishment. So, Chief, without further ado, thank you so much for joining me tonight and being part of the show.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. It means a lot to me. I'm glad we're finally able to do it. So like I said, for
I know,
the
audience, you read all those, you read all those things, and I just like, who is that? You know?
Yeah. There's more. You know there is. You know, there's more.
Yeah,
that's why I was
no,
trying to figure
on,
out a
man.
Way to summarize it. I'm like, oh, man. Well, you know,
sometimes
listen,
I wonder,
you're a seasoned
as much,
guy. So.
Well, as much as I move, I wonder if I'm running away from something or am I running to something? I don't know.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's all good, man. So typically the people that have listened to my show before, I have a generic kind of bank of questions. Some of them change specific to the guest because some people have different backgrounds, but I like to ask the same things just when we stay on the course of a topic for the show. but because it showed that everybody's different. Everybody has different experiences, but it's nice for my listeners to have an idea of these people's perspective. So because I know who you are, and a lot of us that are fortunate, at least in the Department of Army, definitely in the Department of Defense, know who you are. For my listener, you know, I have a broad spectrum of people that come from all over fire and emergency services, especially in the U.S. and abroad. So tell me a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, and what inspired you to get into the fire service.
All right, thanks. Hey, so I'm originally from the suburbs of Cleveland, Ohio. My mom and dad, my dad was a tool and die maker. He owned his own small business. My mom worked in shipping. And so when I turned 18, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I went to college for a year, and I that didn't go anywhere for me. And so I thought about joining the military with really no aspiration. I just didn't know what to do. So I'll take a couple minutes to share how I got in the fire service, because I was never really inspired to it. I feel like it just I think it was just I don't want to sound weird about it, but I think the fire service picked me. Because I remember going to the MEP Center. If you ever enlisted or got into the military, you have to go to the Military Enlisted Processing Center, and they tell you to arrive there with five different jobs. Come up with a job that you want. And I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I remember vividly driving down to the MEP Center, and I'm on State Route 306, and I look in my rearview mirror, and there's a fire truck. And I pulled off the side of the road, and those trucks screamed by me, going someplace in a hurry. Had no idea what it meant. As I traveled down the road, I got up to an overpass, and there had been a car accident, a multi-vehicle accident. And when I saw what those guys were doing, I said, that's what I want to do. And I drove that MEP center, and I said, do you have firefighters? And they said, absolutely, we do. And I entered the delay enlistment program, and I had to wait for that job to come open. So that's how I got into the fire service. It's not a family tradition. It was nothing that was really deep in my soul that I had to do. It kind of found me. And so I went in the Air Force, and after my time in the Air Force, I went as a civil servant. I'm a civilian for the Department of the Army now. But I've had the privilege. That experience just took me all around the world. I have been in Japan and had the opportunity to train with Japanese firefighters. I've had the opportunity to go to Europe twice, and I trained with German firefighters, French, the British. I had the opportunity to meet some Russian firefighters and do a training event with them. Spent a day down in Venice, Italy, with the Venice Fire Department. And then, of course, I had time up in New England, just outside of Boston, some time in Florida, and now where I'm at in Kentucky and Tennessee at Fort Campbell. So it's just been a privilege just to have the opportunity to go around the world. And the thing that's so unique about firefighters is it doesn't matter what nationality you are. I have found that there's just something in the DNA of a firefighter, whether you're culturally different, whether whether your tactics and strategies are different. Look up in England, they're very structured in how they do air management, or whether you're in Italy, where it's a little looser concept, there's something in the DNA of a firefighter that makes you do what you do. So that's kind of my career, and that's why I tell people I think the fire service picked me.
No, I like that. That's a cool story. It's good for the listener. You know, I try to explain it to people, like, same thing, you know, there's huge merit to legacy firefighters that followed in their dad or their uncle or brother or whatever footsteps. You know, it's a beautiful thing. I truly love it. But I also wasn't either. My grandfather was a firefighter, but I didn't know until I was older, because he had retired literally the same year I was born. He retired 2 months after I was born. There was such an age gap. I was a mistake for my parents. But it is nice to hear that, you know, like that version of the, you know, fire service kind of picked me, you know. I like hearing that stuff. I like, you know, for my listener, I want you to guys to understand, you know, the other thing is, and I've said this to people so many times, is like, whether you realize it or not, or whether these that are available, not to sound cliche or dorky, but the fire service is such a rewarding thing. You know, I've been all over the country and met so many different people and talked to so many different people and learned from so many different people and workshop with so many different people and networked, you know, the key word there, with so many different people, all because the fire service has given me that opportunity. You know, there's not many professions or lifestyles that give you that same opportunity to go all around and meet and do all those things. So it's just beautiful to hear you share those experiences and how, like, you had no idea where you're going or what you wanted to do. And then how rewarding it has been, you know, just because these guys were going to a call that day and it just kind of the stars aligned. And I think that's an awesome story. And I want the listener to understand, you know, like, you don't have to be second, third, fourth generation firefighter to make a difference. You know, seize the moment, take advantage of every opportunity that you have, because this career, this lifestyle can be so rewarding with where it'll take you as long as you are willing to utilize those opportunities. So that's awesome, man. Thank
Absolutely.
You. So the other part of the class is we like to talk about training and leadership. I think they both go hand in hand. You know, we have a lot of people walking and talking and writing about leadership. There's a bunch of different fancy stickers and memes and sayings, and most of them are relevant as long as they're used properly or the person that is sharing them also isn't sharing them hypocritically. But in my show, I like to ask my guests, because typically most of my guests have some kind of background in that. And even if they didn't, again, for the listener, you know, the best person to ask about what they expect from leadership is actually a person who isn't holding rank, because they're the ones that are in the audience. They'll tell you. They're watching. They want to know. You know, they'll tell you what you want to know and what they think it should look like. So tonight's episode, we're covering the importance of training and leadership. So, Chief, in your opinion, are those two things important in the fire service, and why?
Well, absolutely, I think they're important, because look at it from two perspectives. And I'm going to approach this question from an individual, as an individual, whether you're a firefighter, a company officer, chief, or just as an individual. You know, I'm not going to talk about from a management perspective. I'm talking about the individual. So it's our job and responsibility to respond to the communities in their perspective, their worst day. And when they call 911 or they call you to come and solve their problem, they don't want they want professional, competent people that can solve their problem. That's what they want, you know, and they have no idea who you are. They can't look you up in a phone book and pick the best doctor. You know what I mean? They get what they get. So it is our responsibility as our communities to be ready. And the only way that we're really going to be ready is when our folks are trained. So I want to talk about that training piece as an individual, because, you know, my perspective is training's in like three tiers. You got task level training, you know, pulling hose, raising ladders, doing just, you know, using your equipment. You got tactical level training, and you got strategic level training. So that incorporates the entire department. But talking about a firefighter, it is their job. You know, it is their responsibility to make sure that they are competent in the skills that are expected to deploy when they're called to do it. You know, I'm a firm believer that this is not a job, it's a profession, and there's a significant difference. And so as a profession and as members of an organization that doesn't get the choice to pick what job they want to do or not do, whether we're trained or not, when those tones go up and that door go up, they're going. And they got to take the skills they have and the training they've done and the experiences that they've had, and they got to solve that problem. So training to me is tied to really, you know, being ready to respond at the individual level. You know, a firefighter's got to make sure they know the equipment on their truck. It's their responsibility, no excuse. Company officers need to make sure their crews are ready to collectively take those tasks and deploy them at a tactical level when they're given an assignment, a primary search and fire control or a roof assignment. That company officer's got a crew that can downright, that's their responsibility. And then strategically, whether you have chief officers or whatever the structure of your organization is, strategically, they've got to be able to see that incident scene, and they got to be able to make strategic decisions, determine what the critical factors are, assign resources to that, and they got to be able to think ahead. What is next? What could probably go wrong next? And all those three levels of training, that's an individual task to make sure they're ready to go. Collectively, they can come together and train, absolutely. But down at the individual level of training, it's the firefighter's responsibility, the captain's responsibility to make sure that what they're, as you said, wheelhouse, what they're responsible for, that they're training for that. Because at the end of the day, the safety of the firefighter counts on it, and the service we deliver to the community counts on it. You know, when you said something about leadership, I want to look at leadership or just talk about leadership, and again, as an individual. Leadership's not a position. I don't believe it's a position. I believe it's a posture. One of the most influential leaders I ever met was a fire inspector, a guy who did code enforcement. Phenomenal guy. It was his ability to influence people around a common goal or vision. So his firefighters, captains, company officers, chief officers, you know, whatever your structure is, your success in leadership is going to be your ability to lead yourself first. And if you don't have good leadership characteristics in yourself, if you don't have that, you don't have something to give somebody, you know. So I think there's a lot of things that are important in the fire service. But when it comes down to the individual, they've got to make sure that their competency level is there. They got to make sure that they're trained. Captain's got to make sure their companies are trained. Chief's got to make sure their shifts are ready to respond, equipment, all that stuff. And they got to be able to lead themselves well, whether they're leading their emotions, whether they're leading the way they approach problems, or whether they're leading the vision that they have for their own individual careers. It's important that we don't look to other people for those. We don't sit around the table and complain because we don't get enough training. We don't sit around and complain about the leadership of an organization or my community is not giving me enough money for my fire department. I can't do this. I can't do that. You know, we've got to overcome those things. And we can do that individually. I mean, there's a collective point. You know what I mean, Dave, when I say that? There's a collective point of training, but there's also an individual responsibility.
Oh, sure. I agree 100% with that. It definitely starts with you first and your ability to do it. You know, if you're not practicing what you preach, per se, then you're just going to be smoke and mirrors, you know, full of hot air and a lot of sexy sayings.
You know, nothing really upsets me more. And I'm not a sneak up gotcha guy. Nothing upsets me more when I walk out to an engine company and we get a new piece of equipment. And I walk out there and I say, hey, firefighter Smiley or captain whoever, you got that new equipment, let me see it. And they open four or five compartments before they can find it. Now that upsets me.
Yeah.
Because that tells me.
Yeah, that drives me nuts.
If there's one thing that they should know, it's that rig that they're on. You know what I mean? Because tactical decisions are made on the fire ground or on the incident scene. And they'll be different. I mean, I might respond to a call or you might respond to a call and I might approach it differently than you do. But at the end of the day, that tactical and task level stuff, it comes off that truck, that crew better know how to use it. Because that's what really frustrates me.
Oh, sure.
That's their number one job.
And not just know how to use it, but like you said before, know where it is. There's nothing that is nails, nothing more of nails on a chalkboard than me hearing compartment doors opening and closing more than once. Like, unless you're grabbing more tools, which I don't know why you'll need them. Like, if I say go grab this or we pull up on a scene and this is the tool that you need, I hate hearing, you know, the boom, boom, and then they're doing the 360 around the engine. And I'm like, dude, like, you know, I say to my new guys when they come in, it's not that I have like a – it's not that I'm being unorganized and I don't have a list of tasks or certain things for them to accomplish as a new person. It's – I tell them like, hey, you know, I'll say to whoever's driving one of the engines, like, hey, go with so-and-so, and I want you to watch everything he's doing when he does his morning check. And the reason why is because that driver knows, at least he should, he or she knows where everything is on that rig. And when they're doing their morning check, you know, they should be checking to make sure everything's working right on that rig. So for my new firefighter, I don't need any type of specific or organized curriculum to introduce you into what it is we do. After roll call, I'm sending you out with the driver at a rig, and I want you to walk around that engine and open up every compartment and, you know, ask the questions. And if you're not asking, I want that driver. I expect that driver to be saying, you know, hey, this is where the LDH is. This is how many feet of LDH we carry. This is how many feet of pre-connects we carry. This is how many pre-connects we have. You know, these are the type of nozzles we have, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is the diameter hose that we have on this crosslay, et cetera, et cetera. You know, because that's pertinent information. So as the rest of the day goes, we get a call. At least you have some kind of a quick brief of what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, and it goes right back to the individual. You know, it just goes right back to the individual. And I just, you know, if we get individuals in our organizations, in our departments, that really believe that it's a profession, and they take that leadership and training role serious, they will be ready to respond. They're not going to let their guard down and shift into something that's complacency, you know. And so there's a bunch of challenges we have in our profession. But getting it back down to the firefighter, that's an individual responsibility that they just need to make sure, because no one's going to get yelled at for walking around their truck checking it out. No one's going to get yelled at for making sure they know where everything's at, checking their equipment. You know what I mean? So, again, it goes back to the individual. If there's competencies that they need to work on, they need to bring those forward and work on them.
Sure, I agree. I'm a firm believer in the exact same thing. Now, for the listener, just understand, especially if you're in a company officer position, that doesn't create an exemption or a hall pass from you to, you know, oh, yeah, well, Chief Kuhn said, you know, that's on the individual, and I agree. Like, so I'm going to sit at my desk in the morning and check emails. Like, nah, bro, you got a new employee, you're a captain, your ass needs to be out there throughout the day too. But I agree, Chief, you know, it is on the individual to have some self-leadership, some self-gumption, some self-drive with that. Because far too many times we do, you know, I'm okay with you being kind of standoffish at first because you're nervous. It's like, you know, you just transferred to a new school. You're a new kid. You know, so I got all that. But, you know, if you're going to not – if you're new – and every time I turn around, I see you sitting on a recliner and you're on your phone, or I see you hiding out in your room because you're playing, you know, friggin' Call of Duty. And my guys will tell you, I named those two things because they happen, and I get in my guys' asses regularly about it. They know it. You know, I let it be known. You know, I'm like that kind of passive aggressive. I'm like, oh yeah, it must be nice to just be able to go in here and get paid a lot of money to play Call of Duty. You know, I'm glad you don't know where everything is on the engine. You know, and as soon as they mouth back, I'll get on the PA and I page them and I tell them that they have to mount up and then I make them pull hose off the rig and repack it. And that's kind of a jerk move on my part, but I also, you know, they also know, like, their asses need to know their stuff. So if you need a little nudge into that self-leadership and self-drive, I'll nudge you. Don't worry, I'll nudge you. I got no problem doing it. But I still have an expectation, as most leaders should, have this expectation of their firefighters that they're going to go and want to be self-driven to learn that stuff. So I 100% agree with you that it starts with individual leadership, individual ownership, you know, individual want to do that stuff, coupled with the rest of it that you discussed, which is, you know, beautifully and eloquently put.
Yeah, and, you know, David, it also goes back to – so, Dave, I heard this too, that, you know, you can train technical competencies and you can train people to be good firefighters, or you can train those things, but you can't train someone to have passion or care. They got to come with that.
Yeah.
I can't train that.
No, it's sad. You're right.
And so you can significantly see it when you're in the stations and in the firehouses, and you can see people who care. And when they care, what do? When a firefighter's not measuring up, they go out and they poke them and say, hey, I care about you so much that we're going to go out and do this again. You know what I mean? So, you know, finding those company officers that really lead their people with care and passion for a reason, you know. I've got them. In our organization, I'm blessed to have some really great people. I have worked in environments that were horrible. I'm very fortunate where I'm at because I got some company officers and you talk about all I got to do is give them the space and the time and they take care of the rest, you know. So that's creating the right culture. I mean, we can go on for hours about all different types of leadership training, culture and things, but at the individual level, it's getting those firefighters to take ownership of their position, their profession, getting company officers to take ownership of their crews and what their responsibilities are. and give them time and space to train.
Yeah. And actually, it's a perfect segue into the next part of that question is, you know, we're kind of touching on it, but I'd like you to elaborate more if you don't mind, because it's the next part of it, is we're talking about the leader also. So, you know, in this realm, what is the leader's role and responsibility to their people in regards to training?
What is their role? Well, if I could rephrase that just a little bit, because to me, I think, you know, if leadership is influence, because I think there's a book out there, I think it's The 360 Degree Leader by John Maxwell, I think that's what it is. And he says that leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less, or something like that. I'm paraphrasing it. But it's influencing people. You know, and I want leaders in our organization, whether it's a firefighter or whether it's a company officer, to lead the organization, not just be so narrow-minded that they're just going to lead their people and watch somebody else fail, you know? So I think a leader, if you're a true leader in your organization, whether you're a firefighter or whether you're a chief officer or whatever, you know, your true role and responsibility is to make sure that you're leading across that organization. You're not huddling that information in. You know those people that keep all the training to themselves or keep all the skills to themselves and they don't train anybody else?
Oh, yeah.
They keep all, you know, keep the knowledge themselves. You know, early on in my career, I had a supervisor, a senior person in our organization. I was in the military. And he looked at me and he said, "You know what, Koontz? I've forgotten more than you'll ever know." You know, one of those guys. And I looked up at him and I said, "Well, you know what?" I said, "If that's the case, then that's your fault." And he looked at me.
Yeah.
And he looked at me because nobody ever confronted. I just said, "That's your fault." Why? You know, a real leader is going to care about people and be passionate for people. You know what I mean? So if I have something and I see a firefighter failing, I want to help them. And that takes courage. Because if you train somebody to have the same competencies or skills, or maybe, heck, they might even be better than you as an individual, or you might be a company officer, you might be a chief officer. If I invest my time into that person, it takes courage to do that. If I'm going to lead that person, it takes courage to do that. Because what I'm doing is I'm leading my competition. And one day this individual could get promoted above me. We're not doing it for promotion. We're doing it because we care about people in the profession. It takes courage to do that, you know, and it takes a coward, all right? It takes a coward to hold the information. You know what I'm saying? They're going to hold all this stuff and not going to help anybody. They relish in people who fail. Oh, that's not my shift. That's not my crew, you know. They relish in that, you know. Those things frustrate me because it's an organization. So when I look for firefighters or company officers to lead, I want them to lead the organization. And if that means that's helping that chief officer, company officer helping a chief officer, anybody, we help the organization. We lead the organization where we can. If we have somebody that has a gap in a competency or a skill, we step in and help. That takes courage to do that because you know how it is in the firehouse. Oh, look what so-and-so is doing for the chief. Look what so-and-so is doing. You know, it takes courage to step up and do that. But you're leading people because it's our responsibility to the profession in each other. Because if we take care of that firefighter first, right, everything else will be taken care of. They'll take care of the community. That call comes in, that service, they're going to go out there and take care of the community. I think there's a quote out there, and I can't remember where I saw it, but anyway, I'll say it this way, that if I take care of the firefighter and give the firefighter what they need, they're going to have something they can give to the community and their customer for what they need, whether it's time to train, whether that's equipment, whether that's a positive culture, or any of those things, you know. So it's a role for all of us to help each other. It's a responsibility to do it to the organization, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, we all have faults. None of us are perfect. None of us. And there's things that we're really good at, and there's things that we're not so good at. And that's why I need, in order for me to be successful and to give my organization or my department the best I can give them, I need help, you know. And so I have firefighters. I have company officers. They'll sit in my office, and they'll share things with me, and they'll talk with me because there's things that I need help with. And so that's a leader's role. It's not a rank role. It's not, hey, I'm a firefighter. Don't talk to the chief. He doesn't know, you know, he doesn't need anything from you. Ain't got nothing important for him to hear. No, we all need each other at all levels because we all have value to bring to the organization. So if you look at people's as a leader, what's your role and responsibility? It's to the organization. It's just not to your company. It's not just to your station. And if we can get people to expand that, then, you know, you're not only developing people, not only is there a sense of satisfaction, but it does take a lot of courage because, you know, life's not fair, and you might be training somebody that someday will pass you up in promotion, and you might be working for them one day. And that takes a lot of courage to do that.
Yeah, and that's a sad reality, but it's a fact. And sometimes, you know, I got it. I'll address the elephant in the room just based off what you just said. I'm just touching on. You know, people will get promoted maybe for the wrong reasons. It happens. I'm not going to sit here and be ignorant and not say that it doesn't. But for the most part, those who are coming in after you that get it and that take on that self-awareness and that have that self-driven leadership, they may end up being your boss one day because they keep that initiative going and they don't sit back and blame everybody else. You know, I say that success is done by looking in the mirror, not by out looking out the window. It's easy to look out the window and cheerlead everybody else. That's what you are. You're their cheerleader. You know, we keep pointing at, oh, so-and-so, you know, look at this guy. Look at what he did. Look what he got. Look what he did. You know, I can't believe, you know, he's this, he's that. Look what he got. He got this. He got that. Blah, 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 blah. You know, all you're doing is cheerleading for them. So, of course, they're gaining more success because they have a fan base. You. Stop worrying about them. You know, go in the friggin' mirror and look at you and dedicate yourself to yourself. And I promise it'll work out. If you're in an area, the expression people don't leave a job, they leave a boss. If you're in an area where you're not being valued for what you can contribute, then I promise as long as you're able to do so, seek other opportunity. But I guarantee as long as you dedicate yourself to the man in the mirror or the person in the mirror and not the person out the window, it's going to happen. It's just inevitable. You know, go ahead, Chief. It sounded like you wanted to say something before I went down to the rabbit hole.
Yeah, I hear this too. That I heard a guy say one time, the grass is not greener on the other side. Well, try watering it on your side. You know, and you know when we talk about like promotions and things, it's almost more important how you respond when you don't get promoted than if you do, because that'll show the true character of a person. You know.
Oh yeah. I always say the best interview in the world is the guy that internally got passed up, how he reacts post being passed up. That's the best interview in the world for the next opportunity.
It is. It is. So.
Yeah. And then just quickly sticking on the leadership topic, just for the listener and people who are inspiring or aspiring to become leaders, or if you are a leader, we talked about the roles and responsibilities of a leader. When it comes to training, and obviously when it comes to being good stewards of their people, their community, their installation, their response area, their department, their mission, all that, you know, just like you said, Chief. But you started off, which I liked, where you said you wanted to reframe it and talk about being influential. So that is extremely important in an attribute of a good leader. So in the fire service, we are a tactical, operational, skill set-based profession. But unless you're in major cities or a really big department, you know, we're not running as many calls as you would like, putting it that way. So with that said, I don't mind. I feel like it is a prereq for you to have a level of experience, a level of skill set, and a level of comfort and ability to make sound decisions based off of your experiences coupled with your education as a leader. I believe that that is important. However, I have worked with firefighters who were the best firefighters I've ever worked with in my life, and they were a for shit captain. because they were so damn good at being a fireman that they sucked at being a captain. Or even worse, because, like, you can kind of get away with being really good at being a fireman and still be a captain. Like, you can get away with that because you're kind of still doing it. You're just the boss of the fire. But chief officers, I've worked with and for and have, you know, met with chief officers who are amazing firefighters but absolutely sucked at being a chief officer. So that piece of influence is very important, and it's actually funny that you started with that, because I always say I don't call leaders, I don't call them position of rank, I call them, or position of authority, I call them position of influence, because it should start with that. You should have an ability to just naturally influence leaders, how that it will positively affect them as the person, their profession, their ability to provide the services for their profession, and then all that other stuff, like you were just saying, Chief, goes hand in hand with it, because now the department is operating, and now we're you know, executing skill sets a lot better, and now the community is in much better hands. You know, but it all starts with that ability to influence your people. And I feel like that is 100% a role and responsibility in all facets of leadership, whether it's training or not, but just speaking on training, you know, you need to be able to influence your people. You need to be able to convince them that training is good. You need to be able to tap into them and make them feel like they're part of training and have them contribute to it. You know, I try to have every member of my department have some kind of part of training, whether they're teaching a class, they're helping me throw together a class, they're coming up with suggestions, whatever it is. Every member of my fire department in each place that I've worked, you know, where I've had some kind of hand in training. So when I was a captain and doing training, to when I was the, you know, the training chief up at West Point, to where I'm at now, I have all of my people have some kind of hand in training, so that they're all feeling like they're part of it. And that they're all influencing others to continue to be part of it. And the program just continues to grow from there. And the guys, you know, their skill set gets better. And also it's a, here's the best part about training, you know, within your fire department. So you're going to get me down on a soapbox when it comes to budgets. And I don't want to talk about that because you're the guest, but I'll say this for the listener. The nice thing about you being in a position of leadership to your responsibility to your people when it comes to training is also used as a really good positive diversion, a good positive distraction. There's a lot of noise and crap that can go on in your firehouse. We're dealing with, you know, levels of, you know, crazy administrative budget cuts and things coming down the pipeline that, you know, that can kind of make you question the future of where we're going to end up being and stuff like that. And it's real easy, and I'm speaking from my own experience and taking my own self-ownership, it's real easy to get pessimistic and get stressed. And when you have no other idea of how you're going to try to keep the men happy and focused or sidetracked from sitting around and commiserating about this crap, this shit show that is presented itself to us, training is a good outlet, because we can joke in training, we can make training fun, we can dust things off, we can start kind of doing good skill sets, we kind of feel valued and like, hey, you know, like, hey, I know this one technique, let me show it, you know, or the new guy that needs to kind of prove himself was able to do so through this training evolution, and guys get distracted from the crap that, you know, kind of consumes their attention and their desire or passion. So you as the leader, it is very important for you to use training also for that tool, for its ability to be the distraction from the unnecessary noise.
Absolutely. So it's no different than a call. When a call comes in, what happens? Doors go up, they get in the truck, and they forget everything else that's going on in the world. They got a specific thing they're focused on. Training is the same thing. If we create great training experiences, you know, then, you know, firefighters will get focused. they'll get focused, and that other stuff will compartmentalize. It'll go away for that moment and that training opportunity or that training experience. We work really hard to make sure our training evolutions bring a real strong sense of realism. You know, whether we're setting up, cutting up cars in a realistic scenario, or just doing hose evolutions, but anything. Most of the company officers' training section were trying very, very hard to make it a realistic scenario, so that they can gain some experience out of that. And it's the same thing as a call. Call comes in, they get focused. Training event occurs, they get focused. So it really does. You know, idle hands are idle hands are the devil's playground. And yeah, they'll get wrapped up in some stuff, and it can be detrimental to a department. But it is a leader. And again, I keep saying a leader is an individual. It's a firefighter. They're leaders. They can have influence. They can lead positively or negatively. Anybody can in our organizations. It's their responsibility to the organization. And they have to take that leadership and training role serious. And as chief officers or as training officers, we got to give them time and space to do that and allow them to train and be engaged with them in training. So, and then those other second, third order things start to go away. You know, because it builds camaraderie, it builds crew continuity, and it improves the competency level of folks.
Yeah. The next part of it, we're covering it a lot, but I'd be interested if you, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, I'd be interested if you had some things that through your experience you look for and that you would try to, I guess, emulate or have in your position now. So you know, we're talking about the leaders and the training officers, right? So what are some good qualities and characteristics that a good leader and or a good training officer, you know, should, or let me remove the word should, what are some good qualities and characteristics that a good leader or training officer must have? And then, why are they important?
Well, that's a deep question because it can go down many. You know, there's so many different.
I'm okay if they go down a rabbit hole. That's why I want you to answer it. Your experience and the positions you've held, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
So here's something. You know, this is not like earth shattering. I think if you're going to be a training officer, you don't have to be the smartest person in the classroom or on the training ground. You don't have to be. I always look at our organizations like a football team. You know, I'm going to put the skill set and the competency or the capability of folks. So if you have a great hazmat trainer, the training officer doesn't have to train that stuff. You get that company officer, that firefighter is a great hazmat, and you get him in there training. You know, expose him to some different experiences in his career. But the training officer has got to care. And, you know, that's something we can't train people. They come with it. And we do have a lot of training officers that they're good administratively. They're great telling you what you're doing wrong. But they're quick to pick things out, but not to solve the problem or help people get better. They got to care. Company officers have to care about their companies. Firefighters have to care about other members of their organization, the people that are leading across the organization. I just think that's a quality. I mean, we want to look at skills and abilities. We all have shortcomings. There's something we're not good at, and we need each other. If a firefighter could solve a problem, fire trucks would have one seat in it. You know, no, they got four, five, six, because it's a company effort. And so the skill set that you have on that company, yeah, it might be stronger than somebody else. The company officer arrives and he assigns you to a specific task, because he knows that you can accomplish that. Where we're at, we're at Fort Campbell's home of the 101st Airborne Division, so they do air jumps and they parachute and do that stuff. And every now and then we'll get a soldier stuck up in a tree, and they'll be 7,500 feet up there. So if we're going to have a firefighter climb that tree and set up a rigging system, a belay system for the soldier, you know, the company officer is going to pick the young man or the young woman that he has the most confidence in to do it. They're all trained, but he's it's a football team. They're going to pick the best player they got to form the task that they got. And so because training officers need to care, they're going to put the time in. They're going to put the effort in. They're passionate about what they do. And that's what I look for. Because, you know, if we have the right character of a person, we can train them to be a good firefighter. But they got to care. And I just think that's a quality that is a leader. When things get difficult, are you going to throw blame around or are you going to take responsibility and care for your people? And so I just think that's a big one, is how do you care for your people? How do you spend time with your people? You know, are you available? Are you approachable? Are you likable? If you want to, you can't influence anybody if everybody hates you, because no one's going to follow you. No one's going to. I'm serious. You know, it's like.
No, I know. I laugh because it's true.
It's true, and you know, it's kind of like Dave. It's kind of. If I take the rank off, will people still follow me, or can I still influence people? Maybe not follow them. Can I still influence people?
Mm-hmm.
The sign of a good leader is when that rank comes off, they're still influential. We have a retired chief officer. That when he shows up at the fire station, people come out of the woodwork to see him, because he's a very influential person. People love him, you know. And then we have some that show up, and you know, I'll leave it at that. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
A leader.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm saying. You know, and I have a dear friend of mine, one of my mentors. He always tells me, "Do you light up a room when you enter it, or do you light up a room when you leave it?" You know what I mean? So I just think you have to be somewhat approachable and likable if you want to influence people. If you're genuine, listen, I'm not perfect. I've had company officers in my office, and we've talked about things, and I think that most folks know I'm comfortable with who I am, and I know that I'm not perfect. When I make a decision that's not popular, I can still influence the organization the direction we need to go. You know, just because
and
approachable
and
people.
Go ahead, but I need to touch on that, because that's a characteristic that you have that I think is natural for you that I've always admired. But go ahead and finish. You know, I want to touch on that.
Well, you know, I haven't always been like this. You know, I think early on, if you would talk to people that knew me in my first 5 or 6 years, you probably wouldn't recognize the conversation, because I was a little different back then.
Yeah, but that's okay, because I'll tell you, people say the same thing about me, too, in that same time frame. It's not even past those first 5 years. So, you know, I think that's a part of growth.
Yeah, and it's also a part of working with toxic leaders, and I've learned what not to do. You know what I mean? But, you know, when we talk about quality and characteristics of leaders, and when I mean leaders, I don't want people to think that's a positional thing. That you as a firefighter, you got to be approachable. People got to be comfortable walk down the hall or walk out to the engine company, you know, or walk over to the, you know, you got an engineer, a guy driving, and a firefighter wants to have more knowledge about that truck. You got to create a comfortable environment for people to be approachable. Where people want to come to you and say, hey, can you help me out? Can you teach me this? You know, and you know, you said something. I want to change this up real quick. So there's, in my mind, there's like two operating systems in a department. You know, when the call comes in, the stall doors go up, and the responders, the crews go out. That's one operating system. Task and tactical communication structures in place. Everybody knows their role, the position that they hold. They know what the first assignment is, second assignment. It's all structured. Communication plans are made. IEPs are relayed. All those things are intentional. They're practiced. They're rehearsed. They are written. In the American Fire Service, generally speaking, we do a really good job with that. But when we're back in the station, the stall doors go down, that's where the chaos begins. And that's a different operating system. So on the fire ground, I don't want to be approachable. I want to be heard. I mean, the IEP has to be clear. The firefighters have to know their task and purpose. All those things have to roll out, and we're good at that collectively. When we get back in the station, we don't need to operate a department like that. You know, we don't need to be, there doesn't need to be a dictatorship. It needs to be a collective environment that is approachable, that's dynamic, that can move, that's agile when we're changing training objectives, when we're, you know, COVID-19 kicks off and half the time most departments, you know, what do we do with this patient? What do we do? You know, and so we have to be very agile in those moments. And so the quality of leadership is you care, you're approachable, you're likable. And then we can get into all the other things about leadership, like are you decisive? Can you make a decision? Because nothing drives me crazier if someone afraid to make a decision. You know, and right or wrong, let's make a decision. But, if you're in an organization where people are, where you create an environment where you're a leader, whether you're a firefighter, an engineer, and you're approachable, you would be amazed at what people will tell you. I am amazed, and I'm not the greatest leader in the world. I'm not the greatest fire administrator in the world. I'm a very approachable person, and you would be amazed what firefighters tell me just because they feel comfortable to walk in and say, this is this and this is that. You would be amazed. But that gives me an understanding of the true condition of our organization and how can I influence it to be better, you know? So that characteristic, if we can get people to slow down a little bit, be approachable, be likable, you know, I know that what our firefighters see on a daily basis, some see it more than others. Like Dave in our organization, I've talked to you, you know, some of the things that have gone on in our organization have created some stress. And, you know, on the traumatic calls that we've been on, those types of things, that burden weighs on our firefighters. They go on calls that weigh on them, whether it's a suicide or it's an auto accident or it's a child fatality or any of those things weigh on the firefighter. There's enough stress outside those stall doors. When they're inside the house, I want it to be comfortable. I don't want to walk in a room and people start stressing out. I don't want to create more stress on them. That approachable, hey, he really does care for us. They genuinely believe in what we're doing as an individual. That helps lighten some of that stress that our firefighters are carrying. You know what? And sometimes it's just one call that weighs on them. And I'm not going to come in and yell because the kitchen's not clean or the truck's not washed or I'm going to influence them to do those things, but I'm not going to yell at them or scream or holler or throw things or whatever, environments might be out there. But, so when you talk about those things, I just think, that's a foundation. You got to be approachable. You got to be likable because you're never going to influence anybody. As much as you want to try or think you are, you're going to take your rank off one day and realize there's nobody standing around looking for you.
You're going to have nobody to talk to.
Yeah, nobody to talk to.
Yeah. Yeah. Now,
that was my
I got my mind. Guys texting me. No, it was great. I'm listening to you, and you're talking about, how you would react as a leader, because the show's live right now, and I got one of my guys texting me about throwing things. Because I don't do it out of anger. I do it actually to create a diversion. Like, I'll scoop ice and throw it. Just to kind of like throw guys off.
I tell you all the time, Dave.
Yeah, it's you got to break up the monotony, you know?
Yeah, I got it.
I know. I know. It's a badge of honor, though. No, but I just want to touch on before we go to the last part of it. I do for my listener, and I'm not trying to. You know how I talk. So, like, I admire you, and you're a person I look up to, and you're a great mentor to me. But I'm saying this so that the haters that are listening, like Howard Stern, he has just as many listeners that love him also listen to him because they hate him, because they want to hear what he has to say. So I'm sure we got some people that are giving us the horns under the table and hating. So I'm going to say this. I'm not kissing your ass when I say this. I say this because it's real. So I don't really care or am interested in any negative feedback from the haters out there. We'll simply say, I've never worked for you. However, I feel like we've worked with each other on a multitude of different tasks and projects, and you've guided and led me and the group that we both are part of to a lot of successful things, and I appreciate that. One of the things that I admire about you is your approachability. So like you said, maybe, you don't have all the best skill set in the world. There's times where you could have or would have or definitely have made a mistake, and you're not the best at certain things, and you've made a decision that
you know, can be considered unpopular, or you had to push something out that even you yourself knew was going to be unpopular, but you were in the position to have to do it. But you've always maintained your ability to have the people skills to put it in a sense that it doesn't sound as bad as it is. And I say that and I share that. It's not that we're trying to mess with people or manipulate people, but approachability and delivery are huge qualities in a leader, and they're things that you have, and that's the thing I think I love about you the most, that for the number of years that we've been in contact, I talk to you so much, is because of your availability, your approachability, and your delivery. There are things that sometimes are out of our control when it comes to the road ahead. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the end of the road or end of the world. It's just we're dealing with it now. So you've been doing this longer than me, and in the time that I've been through it, it ebbs and flows. There's some good years, and then there's some bad years, and we just have to figure out how we're going to get through it and continue to be progressive and proactive. So with that, it's also about delivery. When we have to deliver bad news, we have to try to do it in such a way it's received, that it's with empathy, that the guys believe that you know that this sucks too. But we're going to get through it together as a team, and we're going to try to come up with a way to maybe soften the blow as best we can. I'm all ears kind of thing, give me some feedback. But then don't just do that and use that as like your script, like as I'm telling you, the listener, like, okay, so I'll go to my people and I'll say, hey, give me some feedback. Then act on the feedback and don't react. Act on the feedback, like process it, strategize, and then figure out how you can move forward with the feedback that you get. If you put out a questionnaire or you put out the feeler to say, hey, I'm interested in your feedback, and you get none back, well, you need to do some soul searching on your own end and readjust gears on how you're going to try to tap into them to get them to talk to you. So like one of the things that I've had that I've struggled with, and I I'm not making this about me. I just want to share this because I'm quite positive I'm not alone in my problem. And I don't even think this is a problem, but it's something that I deal with for a few years now. So I admire that ability that you have, because I've almost never had it in one of my leaders. And I feel bad, and I apologize up front to any of my past leaders who are listening to my show right now. But it's the truth. I didn't feel that they had that accessibility or availability when I needed it. So my couch is never empty in my office, almost to the point that it becomes a nuisance. Because I just finished my degree and the guys were joking about how they would purposely stay in my room all hours of the night when I'd be on my 24 to distract me from being able to write my paper, but it's all in good fun. And I'm proud of that. Like I wear that as a badge of honor, because they're not hanging out in any of the other chiefs' offices and talking to them and telling them their real world problems. They're not venting or purging to them. And it can get taxing at times, and it's trying on me because I have to sit there and try to be optimistic when I know that the past few weeks I know that I'm very pessimistic in my reactions and responses because I feel it too. But I do admire or appreciate that because I didn't have it, and I know how important that is. And I've always had, my bosses or superiors or even my partners, my counterparts, really hate that about me. It almost was twisted around, like, well, what do you think? Why are the guys always talking to you? They shouldn't be talking to you. What do you want from me? They feel comfortable. Do you really want to just kick them in the nuts completely and say, now you're not allowed to talk to Dave anymore? What are we doing here? And that's not just in what I'm dealing with currently, I'm saying just in general in my career since I've been a leader, I've had that I've always tried to have that ability or characteristic to be approachable and available. And I always admired about you because I've told you this many times. I've never found anyone in your position to have that characteristic. And I feel like it's very important. So I appreciate
I'll tell you,
telling you it works.
They're out there. You know, I mean, early on in my career, I had a boss that told me one time, you want to get people to want to work for you, not that have to work for you. And if you can get an organization of people that want to work for you, then anything's possible. So that's why we need to create that culture around you, whether you're a firefighter or you're a company. Listen, I got company officers that, you know, we did some crew assignments a few years ago, and we shook it up a little bit, and we gave company officers the opportunity to pick stations, and then we gave firefighters the opportunity to request, not that they all got it, to work for a company officer. And you very quickly found out who wanted to work for who, because those company officers created an environment to get people to want to work for them, you know? And the only way my company officers do that, I don't want to say mean, but the only way we do that as individuals is to create that environment around us as an individual that's approachable, that's likable, people know they care about you, because we're human beings. We're not machines. You can break equipment and replace it. You break a person, and that's going to be a lot harder to repair. You know, the relationship is so, so important. Not that I get it perfect every time, because I don't, but it's so important how we treat the people in our organization. So you have to lead people with care and compassion. You have to be approachable, because that's what'll create people wanting to work for you. You know, here's an example. Several months ago, I had a firefighter. I'll just say it's a firefighter with a different rank, but a firefighter called. He said, "Hey, I really want to apply to Fort Campbell." And he called our training officer. We've had several vacancies. And I said, "Hey," I called him on the phone. I said, "Well, why did you call me?" "Well, I didn't want to talk to the fire chief because, you know, fire chiefs don't like firefighters calling them." And you know what? That's sad. That's sad that our profession has created an environment where people are afraid to call somebody, that we're like unapproachable. And this individual had a personal thing going on. He needed to get close. And so we worked through some things, and it's just sad that I could have potentially got this guy months earlier, right, because he was a very good candidate. But he was afraid to call me because of what our profession has created in some environments out there, that they're afraid to talk to people and they're not approachable, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, you want to talk about caring, it's not – we're people, we're individuals. This candidate, this individual ended up not coming. He had to turn down this offer, right? And he felt horrible about it. And our number one concern should not be the pressure that it may have or may not have put on our organization. My number one concern needs to be that individual. We need to take care of each other. And so that's why I think, yeah, whether you're a trained officer or a firefighter or any of those things, we need to be approachable. We need to care. We need to create that environment. Talking about weaknesses, mm-hmm, Dave, you know, I am not a person of conflict. I don't like conflict. If I'm going to manage conflict, I've got to calm myself down and be in an environment where I can control it, because I don't want to blow off the handle. So I don't like walking off at people saying they're all jacked up, you know, because I'm not perfect either. So that's not my nature to go out and do that. But if I have to sit down and look somebody in the eye and say, "You weren't promoted because of this," I'll do it. And people genuinely believe, you know, we're trying to do what is right and what is best for the organization. And just like we talked about promotion stuff earlier, it's more important how you react when you don't get promoted than when you do. That tells you a lot about the character of who you are as an individual. And it's also a sense of, as a leader, you know, I've had firefighters, you know, get trucks stuck on curbs. I've had them get a piece of equipment broken, lost the radio, all those types of things. Yes, it's frustrating, but hey, we've got to move on. I'm not going to hold that against these folks for the rest of their career. You got to have somewhat of a forgiving spirit that goes along with leading your organization. You can't hold something over someone's head forever, because if we did that, none of us would be in the positions we're in with the mistakes we've all made, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, Dave, you know, I think that you know, I'm who I am. I'm comfortable with who I am. And I think, like, for the listeners, your folks, they really need to find out who they are as an individual and be comfortable leading in who they are, because we're all different.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to get into the last part of this. I ask every one of my guests, and it's just, you know, it's always one of them stumping questions, but I ask it because it's I've always gotten some great answers. So what type of legacy do you want to leave behind?
What type of legacy? Well, you and I spoke about this, I don't know, a few months ago. I'm not like this huge, you know, legacy type of person. What's the most important thing that I want to leave behind is I want to leave behind the right people that will take the organization that we have today, the profession that we have today, and advance it further. That's what I want to leave behind. Because, you know, it's funny because, so I got the fire chief position at Fort Campbell about 6 years ago. So I step into this organization. The first thing we do is we erase everything from the previous fire chief. His name comes off the door. My signature block goes on all the SOPs and SOGs. We change this. We change that. The phone numbers change. You know what I mean? You're literally erasing that person existed. You know? So the legacy is not in the things that are around us. The legacy is not in the accomplishments that maybe we make as individuals. The legacy is what we leave in the next generation. So when I look at some of the younger generations, the younger captains, some of the chiefs, all I hope is that when they sit in their position and they move forward, that they take what they have learned, the things that hopefully I've influenced in a positive way, and they move the organization forward. Because 10 years from then, nobody's going to know that I even existed. You know, I mean, I'm still going to have friendships out of those things, but as an organization, I want it to move forward. That's a legacy I want to leave. I want to make sure that my folks, the folks that I come in contact with, are better in the next generation than the generation we are today, that they can continue to move things forward. And then when I show up, hopefully I can get a cup of coffee that tastes as bad as it does today, but hopefully I can walk in, see some faces, and celebrate as younger generations advance in their careers. I can be part of that celebration. So to me, that's what the legacy is. It's not in things. Not in accomplishments. You know, people retire, all those things come off the wall, they go in a box and end up in the attic. What I want is I want it to be in the people in the careers that they have, you know, that I've had the opportunity to somewhat influence. And that goes both ways. I mean, you know, I get influenced by them as well, but just to hopefully advance the profession holistically by the engagement of the people that are around me.
Yeah, beautiful. I love it. Before I wrap it up, I'm leaving you with the floor. Any final words you want to say to any of the listeners or anything like that? The floor is yours.
You know, in the spirit of training leadership, it doesn't matter if you're a probationary or a firefighter. It doesn't matter. You're going to lead in either a positive direction or a negative direction. Be hopeful in that, you know. Get connected with somebody. Be willing to be self-reflective of what you can do right and wrong. And you're always going to be engaging around people, and even in our profession, that they're going to teach you how not to do it. You know, so don't think that you're not a leader. Lead right from where you're at today, right from the back seat, the front seat, wherever you're at. In training, my deputy chief, I shouldn't say my deputy chief, but the deputy chief Fort Campbell, is probably the most competently, probably not even a word, but one of the most competent people I know, technically competent, you won't find anybody better. And he always says this, he continues to refine his craft of this profession. And I just encourage people, never, ever stop learning. Never stop learning the craft of our profession, because it's going to be different. You'll be pulling hose. You should know everything about fire hose, axes, ventilation, forcible entry. You should be an expert. You should be just always refining that craft. And as you advance in your career, refining your craft is going to change. You're going to have to learn to maybe do budgeting better, maybe learning staffing better, maybe learning equal employment, hiring stuff, how to really select the best candidate. But always, whatever it is in your profession, I mean, in the profession, whatever it is, continue to just refine the craft of the profession, who you are, the position that you have.
Beautiful. I love it, Chief. So to sum it all up, guys, you got to be available. You got to be approachable. You got to be decisive. And you want to be able to leave it where you can keep it moving. So, you know, good food for thought. This is a really good show, a lot of great information from a really experienced guy, and I really appreciate you being a guest, Chief. So for my listeners,
well, I appreciate it.
That was –
No,
you're more than
I'm
that,
man.
I appreciate it.
Listen, I tell everybody I'm just a firefighter with a job title. You know, I appreciate
I've heard you say that. I like that.
I know. I appreciate the acknowledgement of things, but at the end of the day, I'm no different than anybody else. And I just think that, you know, Bob Kuntz is who I am and Chief Kuntz is what I do. And I just think that we as a profession got to get our head wrapped around how we take care of our workforce better. How do we take care of the firefighter? And guess what? It may cost you something, but I just still think that's worth it.
Yeah, it is. All right, well, thanks,
Chief,
and to all my listeners, thank you. No, you're good. You're good, man. You can keep going. I listen. I love listening to you. You know that. I talk to you every week.
Come on.
But for my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been Dave McGlynn with Fire Engineering Podcast, Networking for Success. I want everybody to stay safe and, you know, take care of yourselves out there.
Thanks for tuning in to Fire Engineering Talk Radio.